Let's begin again. All right, we're back in session.
All right, people, let's go.
All right.
Cold in here.
Thank you, everybody. I'm going to ask, we're going to really do some juggling here for the sake of our staff. Peter?
Yeah.
Would you take up resolution C, please, the green building policy?
Resolution C is in Charlie, right?
Yes.
Packet page 25.
Yes. Packet page 25. Yes, I'd like to move resolution number C, adopting policy number 01.
Your mic, Peter.
Yeah, I'd like to move resolution C, adopting policy number. The right thing is in the packet, right? Well, there's nothing different there either. Number 01, green building. I'd like to move that.
Seconded by Pat. There's not a revised. Is there a revised?
Not of the resolution, but of the policy.
Of the policy. Okay, right. There we go.
I think it speaks for itself. I don't think that I have to particularly add anything to it.
Is there any discussion? Mike, and then Dooley.
First of all, are we doing the amended version that came out of government operations?
Yes.
Okay. I'd like to propose an amendment, and that is to change the definition of a major project from that with a total construction cost of at least $500,000 to one costing $1 million. And the reason I'd like to recommend that, if I get a second.
Is there a second for that?
Second for discussion.
The reason I'd like to recommend that was based on a discussion at Government Operations Committee where Earl Amaro was there, and we discussed this about 500 versus a million. He's comfortable with either. $500,000 projects for us usually are renovation projects. They're more difficult to do. They're harder to meet LEED's requirements. The million-dollar projects are usually in that neighborhood of being new construction. The idea of this policy, I think, is a great one, that we try to achieve the good green building the policy of doing green buildings. But I don't think we should start from the beginning on renovation projects as low as $500,000 and have the extra cost of certification by LEEDs added into that project at that threshold.
So that's been moved and seconded. Mike, you assume you want that to show up on the last, you know, in B on the second page.
It's in the definitions.
Okay.
Too.
All right. Discussion. Dooley, Peter, Kathy, Luce.
Well, also based on the discussion at GO, where Ed felt fairly strongly about keeping it at $500,000. It did not pass GO, and I support the lower number. It doesn't make us do LEED, make us spend a large amount of money necessarily, but to look at it. And so I don't support raising that dollar amount at this time.
Peter?
This was discussed extensively at the GO meeting. We did actually raise it because the way it came to us was that the total cost of the project was $500,000 was the threshold, but this is only the construction part of it that is $500,000. So that actually lessen the number of projects that would meet that specification. There's no sharp dividing line on this. I actually asked why we don't do it on every project, because even a little bit of leads will help the environment. And the answer to that, which I took, was that there's a fair amount of fixed overhead cost in actually evaluating something, and if you have projects that are too small, you spend a fair amount of time and therefore money evaluating projects that aren't going to give you much of an advantage. And so I just took the advice of the experts. I have no idea where to draw a line on that. It seemed to me that Aurel said that that was a reasonable place to do it, where we drew it at the moment, and so this amendment was defeated at the meeting, and I haven't heard anything to change my mind about that.
Kathy Luce?
Thank you. I'm glad that this is being raised. I'm looking at the policy, the revised policy, and on the page, the section 3, procedure, there's exemptions 3B. I'm trying to understand here, because it looks to me like the exemption 3B, basically it's got a covered project does not have to meet the LEED standard where the construction cost is expected to total less than $500,000, although it may do so, and the covered public improvements necessary for the project involve only the renovation or rehabilitation of a portion of a building, or the improvements necessary are for the expansion of an existing building. Now, somebody has to explain to me, because it sounds to me like what that's saying is kind of what you're asking. In my opinion, I think that leaving it at the 500 is fine, because by my reading of that, if we're doing an expansion, it can be exempted anyway, if I'm reading it correctly. So I don't know what the big problem is anyway, except that I think the 500,000 is a good threshold for us. I've run into situations in the past where raising a threshold has become an attractive standard to outline where a given project could fall below in order to keep from requiring our policies. And, you know, I think that that would be unfortunate, and that's why I prefer the lower one, because we want to encourage projects, if possible, but do it in a practical way. And if I ran around that too much, the last thing I'd like to ask is, somebody mentioned that there was a big discussion of it, and without putting him on the spot, if I could get an explanation from Ed, or just, you know, a rendition of what the discussion was around, because I tend from my gut to want to support the 500,000, but if there's a rational explanation that isn't covered by the exception 3B, I'd be interested in it.
I think that the major project definition and B are kind of covering the same thing, basically saying the projects, you know, under 500,000 would not be covered by this. The only thing I would point out is the other exemptions under 3A, that if a project would otherwise be covered but there is no appropriate LEED standard or not practical to apply a LEED standard, then some other appropriate green building standard can be set with approval of the appropriate legislature committee. So there's a fair amount of flexibility in dealing with a project that may not fit LEED well or doesn't, you know, is not appropriate for LEED certification in the policy, I think.
So as to the difference between $500,000 and $1 million as the threshold, what do you think the effect of that would be?
Obviously the advantage of having the $500,000 is that you're going to take a look at more projects critically to see if there's an opportunity. And then if there's not, these exemptions under A, 1, and 2 might apply to a project that is over $500,000 but is not practical to apply LEED to, then you do something else. Okay.
Thank you. Pat and then Frank.
Yes, we also discussed this at a fair amount of length in the Government Operations Committee, and both Ed was there, and then Aurel was able to leave another meeting and come over to discuss it with us also. And I would support what Mike is suggesting, primarily because it was very, I thought it was very clear in the meeting that although Orell was very careful about the way he worded what he said, that his preference would have been for the higher number. And I think he feels he can live with the 500,000, and of course he will live with whatever it is that we decide. But to me, it was very, very clear that his preference was for the 1 million. And if you think about his role in trying to carry out this policy, if something is going to be questioned as to whether or not it's going to fall under the LEED standards or if some other standards are going to be applied to it, as is suggested here, it's going to be a lot of work on his part to help make that determination. He's going to have to do a fair amount of research and working up of figures and looking at the engineering that's going to be required of the project to even determine whether or not that project would qualify or not. So I don't feel comfortable with the way, with the description of the level of acceptance in the committee. The vote was close. It was 3-2. And I think that we need to be very aware, if we don't support this, that we are going to be asking Orell or anybody that might happen to be in that position to do a considerable amount of extra work to carry out this policy the way that we've written it on those projects that are right close to the edge.
Frank, and then Brian, then Carol.
Thanks, Martha. I think because this focuses on construction, if you go back to Roman 3:1a, it says policy shall be designed, constructed, and managed to at least the LEED Silver standard. This number only applies, as I understand it, Mike, to the construction part, or is it the total project cost?
We raised that question in committee, and Orell told us it depends on what the determination is of the project. For example, in some projects, the furnishings are part of the construction cost. It's how it's bid.
So I would agree then that we, to give us the flexibility, the higher number would be more appropriate. Secondly, can anyone who helped draft this explain the significance of Roman 3, number 3, letter B, the part that's in what appears to be brackets? It says, although it may do so. Does that mean it's part of the proposed policy, or does it mean it's not part of the proposed policy, or is it a suggestion that somebody may consider? If it's part of the policy, let's take the brackets off. If it's not, let's take it out of there. Just, can someone explain that one?
Carol?
Yeah. A project doesn't have to meet the LEED standard if it's below that amount.
I understand
that. But it can. And I think that the reason it's important to keep that in there is that it is going to be easier and easier as time goes on to meet LEED Silver standards. It's the affordable housing organizations are doing it now. Architects are designing, know how to design to LEED standards now. The builders are building product, you know, with the construction companies, the companies that make the products are making insulation and wallboard and things that make it a lot easier to build in the kinds of things we're talking about. So we're going to get to a point where it may not be possible to not design to LEED standards over the period of time that this policy will be in place.
Are you arguing that all I'm asking is, should we leave the brackets on or take the brackets off?
Does that the brackets indicate that's an addition? Is that right?
I think it's just to clarify that it's if we by mistake end up with LEED standards, we're okay. We're still within the policy.
The brackets were there Before there were commas. Now there are commas. You don't need the brackets.
Don't need the brackets.
Thank
okay.
you. Right. Good. Last one, Martha.
Yeah, but if I can just say, Frank, about Romans 3, number 1a. And that the 500,000 or a million is the threshold above which this policy applies. I don't think that really refers to what's described in 3.1a. I think that we're just talking about the difference in the threshold, and it just says that all covered projects.
Ah.
So in other words, if it's a $500,000 project, if that's the thing, then this policy shall be designed, constructed, and managed to at least lead silver. That just means, are we talking about $500,000 projects or $1 million projects? That's the amendment that we're talking about.
Okay. Thanks for helping clarify that. The last one I have, and maybe it's for Pat. This came through GO, so I guess it would be Pat. Roman 2, the policy paragraph. Regardless of what anything else that we've proposed here or will be proposed, the very last sentence in that paragraph says, a decision on whether to seek certification will be made on a case-by-case basis. So regardless of what the dollar amount is, am I reading that correctly? The committee or whomever is going to be the deciding body here is going to be able to deliberate on whether or not to seek the LEED certification anyway. Am I understanding that correctly?
What section was that again?
Roman 2 policy.
Top of
the very last
page.
Sentence of, it's the top of page 27, do we? Mm-hmm. Packet page 27.
Well, are you asking me?
I'm asking, I guess, Pat or any member
I believe that says, Frank, this says that the construction and renovations of county-owned buildings shall meet at least the equivalent of the LEED Silver standard. The decision on whether to seek the formal certification, which is part of the, which is relatively expensive, and you know, I mean, we can go online and see what the standards are, and build according to those standards. Getting that certificate involves a lot more documentation and a lot more work. That's great if you really need the certificate, but if what we're concerned about is the actual construction, we may not have a big, you know, we may not really care that much about the certificate. So a decision about whether to seek that certificate will be made case by case.
As long as, is that the understanding of the committee?
That was my understanding when we discussed it at the committee.
Thanks.
Okay, I've got Brian, Carol, and Peter.
That was part of what I was going to be bringing up. First off, I tend to agree with Mike in that this day, $500,000, you're probably doing a renovation. You're not doing a new construction, even an addition. My question is, you just answered part of it. In order to get the formal certification, that costs money. I understand that. In terms of the planning and design phase of a project like this, Ed, does that cost more up front before you even start with the just to see if it's worth doing, or you know what I'm saying? So
sure.
you might actually be doing both simultaneously, which would probably drive up the cost.
Right, and I believe Orel has a LEED certification. He has gone through the training. There is a checklist. So it's relatively straightforward to go through the checklist and figure out what might be applicable to your project. So it's an exercise you go through. We did it on the health department early in the project and determined, without a whole lot of technical analysis, that we thought we could get a certain number of LEED credits based on the kind of project we wanted to do and the things that you might do in addition to make sure you get them. So it requires some time, but I guess I would say that's time well spent, because a lot of this stuff ends up paying for itself too by taking the time to consider all of those things in evaluating a project up front, you may find that you make decisions that will save you money in the long term. And just what we heard today, I think we need to be much more mindful and conscientious of what we're doing on all types of projects. So I think it's an effort, but it's an effort and time well spent.
Okay. Could you speak to the first part of that then? Would you agree that $500,000 figure would tend to speak more towards a renovation project, and that, you know, a higher figure such as $1 million would be more of a new construction?
Right. And we just finished a capital plan that I don't think we had any new construction in for buildings for the next 20 years. So I think we'll be mostly likely we'll be doing renovation projects in the time foreseeable future.
Carolyn, Peter.
Yes, I just wanted to point out that this has spent a long time in the both first the planning committee, which is what it came out of initially, and then the F&I committee. And part of the reason it took such a long time was that it came out of planning just as Arel had gotten sick, and we really wanted to make sure that he was going to have a chance to weigh in on and consider when he had the time to do so, when he was back full time, to consider whether this would be onerous for him. And so we kept putting it off and putting it off, and the planning committee kept saying, you know, we'd really like to do this. And to my surprise, when he came back, when Arel came back, he said, this is doable. And not only is it doable, we raised the question about whether we should be using somebody other than LEED as a template that might be a little less onerous. And he said, no, LEED is possible. LEED Silver is possible. So I'm okay with the change that was made that essentially already lowers the amount. The change from 500,000 as an overall project cost to 500,000 as a construction cost is already a compromise and a change from what had come out of those two committees. And I don't necessarily want to see us compromise further and raise the amount to $1 million. I also do agree with Kathy that 3B seems to clearly exempt those projects if they're less than that amount already, where it's just a renovation. So I'm satisfied that we've spent a long time. I think it was almost a year ago, it was last summer that this first was being discussed in the planning committee, and we've spent a really long time trying to get to a good spot with this. And I also do believe that that this saves us money in the long run, and it does not make sense to build any of our projects anymore without incorporating these energy efficient and environmentally sound practices. So I will support this the way it is.
Peter, then Dooley.
I guess I just want to almost repeat what I said before. This is obviously written as a flexible policy, which depends on the experience and discretion of the staff to make a decision as to whether to go forward with this or not. It's clear that the push is to do it rather than not to do it. That the more things we have where it's practical to meet the LEED standard, the better off we are, the better off the world is. It also became clear to me that there's almost no foolproof way of writing in something so that just a robot would know whether to do this project or that project. I wouldn't know which to choose, but Arel would. He has the experience. After the discussion in the meeting, I'm afraid I must disagree with my colleague to my right. I thought Arel was very happy with this particular number, that was a number that sounded reasonable to him to put in his time on, where the benefit was larger than the cost. And I see no reason to change that. So I'll, without knowing why, I will support what Orell said as what he thought the choice of the best number to use was.
Julie.
Having tried to reread this in time for this meeting, I have several distinct different things I want to say. The simplest one is under Policy Roman 2, where the hyphens have been dropped from case by case, so I hope they can go back in. That's the trivial one. And I'm looking at definitions. We define something called a major project, but I'm not sure major is used anyplace else.
Julie, these are really not on the amendment, right? The amendment.
So if major is meant to deal with 500,000, that's the part that Mike wants to amend.
Jonathan?
Yeah. 2 points. One, we're really on the motion to amend right now. And Dooley is right. I mean, it defines major project, and we're talking about 500 or a million, but it doesn't actually use that term in the policy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could change that fairly easily, but by making it basically a sea of covered public project and then putting the policy to cover covered public projects. But as it reads now, it does make sense, as Julie says. But we are right now on the amendment.
So the question of 500,000 or a million I spoke about briefly, but what I recall Orell saying is that he originally thought of a million. Ed thought of 500,000. Orell said he could live with either. And that was my takeaway. And since Ed seemed to feel more strongly, I was guided by that.
And what Carol said, although I wasn't at the discussion, sounds like by defining it as construction costs being 500, it actually kind of created the middle ground there. Mike?
I'd like to call the question on the amendment, please.
Okay. I think we're probably ready to do that. All right. Seconded by Frank. All in favor of calling the question?
Aye.
Any opposed? That is 12-2. It passes. So ready to vote on the amendment of changing them in the definition of major project, the number to $1 million. All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand. Opposed? Is that right? 9-5. That 5-9, that fails. So we're on the main motion. And Dooley, you're saying, and Jonathan, you said, what do we need to do?
Maybe I could articulate it. You just discussed the definition of major project,
uh-huh.
with defining it as a construction cost of at least 500,000. However, in the body, it doesn't actually use that term.
Okay.
So what I would suggest, and this is a little bit of editing, but I think it is, just move that up as number, as letter C under covered public project. Like C would be a project with a total construction cost of at least 500,000. And then the policy would cover all covered public projects, shall meet at least.
Which
you go to policy number 2, all covered public projects shall meet, instead of new construction and major renovations of county-owned building property. So that way we're using those definitions in the actual body.
Okay. So you're taking, instead of having a definition of that's called major project.
Right. Just move that up.
Delete
and make it
those
C.
words and make a C under covered public project and move that whole phrase up there.
Right. And then where it has the policy, just say all covered projects shall meet at least.
Okay. Are those changes friendly to whoever moved and seconded this? Seems like a long time ago. Peter and...
I must confess, I don't quite understand it, but I have faith that Jonathan's done the right thing. I moved it so that I will consider that friendly.
Who seconded? And who seconded? Pat? Pat, that friendly, Pat?
Yes, that's okay.
Good, all right. We're on the same page there. Any other discussion on the main motion? Okay, Dooley.
Yes, I mentioned my hyphens too soon. I'm sorry.
All right.
On page 2, case by case, has lost its hyphens. I have I'm now more puzzled about something in Roman 3, number 3, than I was having gone through this in the past, and that's letter B.
Letter what?
Roman 3, number 3, lowercase b.
Ah, B, yeah.
I don't understand what purpose this serves now. I don't know if it's needed at all. And if it is needed, I don't understand why it refers to totaling less than 500,000 instead of more than 500,000. So if someone could explain, if it would be, I mean, Ed, is it okay to drop that entirely, that letter B?
I think I can explain how it got there, and I think the answer is yes. This was the exemption for projects under 500,000 before a definition was added later. There was no definition of major project originally in the policy, and this was the exemption where projects less than 500,000 didn't have to meet the policy. Now that you've put a definition of covered policy that has the 500,000, if you put that into the definition of covered policy, I think B is redundant. 3B is redundant.
So we could just strike it.
I think you could strike
it. Well,
Carol?
Or does B, we made the distinction in B between construction and new construction and renovation. Would that change if we eliminated this?
No.
That was the way the original policy was intended to work, mm-hmm. but it seems to me that the will of the legislature as being stated is that any project under 500,000, the desire is to have it exempted.
If you look under one definitions and covered public project, that's where you see renovation and rehabilitation mentioned. So I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. So is that a move to strike?
So I would, I'll move removal of that last little letter B.
The whole thing?
I'll second that.
That B and the little one and the little two.
Yeah, and it's replaced with the new definition of major project.
Well, now it's covered public project.
It's already dealt with under the definitions.
Dealt with in the definition.
Thank you.
All right. Does everybody understand? Does everybody read it the same way? That it's already in there? All right. Any discussion on that amendment? Ready to vote. All in favor of making that amendment, striking those lines, please raise your hand. Opposed? That's unanimous. Okay.
So I have one more thing to say. And this, I feel really foolish now, but I have promised Ed I would vote against this because he did not accept my wording someplace else. It sounds really silly. I believe that in the general information section of this policy, we should acknowledge that there are other standards out there other than LEED. And at the moment, we're sticking with LEED because that was who was well known when the energy element of our comprehensive plan was written. And I really thought that we should put it into context as just one of others that are out there. It does say later on that if Arel determines that LEED isn't appropriate, he can set other green building standards for a project. But as long as we don't disclose that there are others out there that some people think are better, I will vote against this policy. So.
May I call a question, Madam Chair?
Moved and seconded to call a question. I would just suggest that Dooley's position be put on the record.
Thank you.
Because I know she'll ask for that. All in favor of calling the question on the policy? And the main vote?
All right.
Let's everybody at once. Everybody in favor of calling the question? 1, 2. Opposed? 10 to 4. That passes. So time to vote on the main question, the green building policy with the changes we've discussed. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? 13-1. All right. That passes. Thank you, Ed and Paula. That is a very great accomplishment. Thank you. And Ed is waiting for a couple of other things, correct? Well, I think probably the peak resolution. Okay, great. Carol Schock, Chair of Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee.
Okay.
And we'll come back to the agenda and the reports and all the rest of it. But let's just take care of this one.
Okay. Well, then I will move the Resolution D as revised in your packets. Resolution D in favor of legislation establishing a ban or moratorium on high-volume horizontal hydraulic fracturing in New York State and restarting the environmental review process due to conflicts of interest. And I so move.
Seconded by Dooley.
Just clarification, Madam Chair.
Uh-huh.
Carol indicated that she was moving the revised one that was in our packet. We received the revised one in our red folders tonight. Which one are you moving, Carol?
I'm sorry, in the red folder. Yes, the revised one in the red folder.
Thank
that
you.
Was the packet I
thank,
meant. Yes,
thank
sorry.
You. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And but you know the it's got horizontal and underlined in the title.
Okay. And also
yes.
There are some changes in the body of the
right, but that's the way to find it. Okay.
So do you want me to say anything about this?
Or? Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, there are bills in both the House and the Senate. Same bill in each one. For both a ban on hydraulic fracturing and a moratorium. In the last few months, it has also come out that several of the companies that, who were hired by the DEC as consultants in the process of the EIS that our body has weighed in on several times, but several of these consultants, particularly the one on the who wrote the socioeconomic impact study, have been not only a member of IOGA, the trade association, the oil and gas trade association, but participated in at least two petitions or appeals to New York State to please go ahead with fracking. And so based on that information, and on the fact that the Assembly has already acted on one of these bills and has discussed another one, and the Senate, we are hoping, will act, would like to call on New York State to preferably ban the process, certainly to restart the whole EIS process, which has been flawed from the beginning, which is why our body has passed all of the various resolutions we have along the way, protesting at various points and the ways in which they've handled this. I'm bringing this to you now. It passed our committee yesterday. Most of the rest of what we did yesterday will not come until 2 weeks from now, but this is coming now because they are still in session, and we are hoping that us weighing in could serve as a template to some of the other counties and towns, some of the 650 other local officials who've been concerned about this process from the beginning, from all 62 counties. And so I'm hoping that we'll pass this tonight.
Thank you, Carol. Brian?
Actually, you just answered part of my question, I believe. And you reference them in the resolution. We have already sent word to Albany our desire for bans and moratoriums. Is that correct?
Yes.
So we've already done it. They already have legislation in front of them for that. I could support a resolution asking for the second part of this whole resolution, because I agree that there were conflicts of interest and it would be flawed. But I don't know. I just don't see it. Why are we still doing this? We've already done it.
Oh, because now there are specific bills with numbers in the Assembly and the Senate.
Okay.
I have them here. There are two copies floating around.
They're referenced in here too.
And they're
let's take a whole nother topic. For example, that there's never been a bill introduced in the legislature, and we send along a resolution saying, this is our position on this, and we would like you to take that position. And then they do it, and they introduce a bill to that. Now we send another resolution again supporting that bill. Do you see what I'm saying? We don't normally do that.
I would say, it was a year and a half ago that we passed our resolutions about the ban.
Right.
I think this is really timely and appropriate. Frankly, they make us do that on our local tax bills, on our sales tax, on our mortgage recording tax, that we say, please allow us to charge a mortgage recording tax. We pass that. Then they introduce a bill. We have to pass, is that on tonight? I don't know. We have to pass another resolution saying, yes, that's the one we want.
By law, yeah.
Yeah, so I think this is actually quite a bit more appropriate than what they ask us to do on those issues. Yeah. This is really reiterating our position and saying, yes, these are the bills we would like. I think it's...
Okay, and I understand that's an opinion.
So, yeah,
and I guess I have an opinion as well. Uh-huh. It's like saying, okay, we were serious a year and a half ago, but now we're really serious. And, oh, by the way, we've got this and in here, which is something new that we could send along and tend to support. I just think it's redundant.
Okay.
I'm sure I'm not in the majority.
Okay. Frank?
Cast a vote of approval, as you say, a year and a half ago. So, go ahead.
Okay, I've got Frank, Will, and then Kathy.
Thanks, Martha. First, I know some of us have not had an opportunity to check every email that came today. I know it started earlier in the day with some changes that were proposed. And I'm really grateful that you clarified that the fatally flawed part has taken a back seat to some actual appearance, that this gives the appearance of a conflict of interest rather than that there actually was one, because from the reports that I read, there was some clarification on who actually belonged to the organization you mentioned. So I thank you for clarifying that. I'm tempted to support this, but I'm having a little bit of a problem. And, Carol, usually you're pretty good about distributing information, but you want us to endorse, in a way, encourage the Senate and the Assembly to support bills that they have in front of them in the event that certain things do or do not happen. You're the only one. I just heard you say that there's two copies floating around. I haven't read. Usually you're pretty good about distributing information, I suspect since this is coming out of your committee that you are the mover. Is there any way to get a sense of exactly what Assembly 5424A and Senate 04236A say? I don't want to be accused of supporting something that I haven't read. We've heard all kinds of accusations going on at the federal and the state level for the very same thing. I would appreciate some sort of background on what those proposed. These have not passed. these are just proposed in both houses. Is that correct?
The moratorium bill passed the assembly.
Is that this number?
That is the
54248.
No, that is the other one. That's the
5424A. It's passed the assembly with a veto-proof margin. That's line 30.
Okay, that is the moratorium one.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Take your time. It'd be good if you could explain these.
Correlate the numbers here. S673.
Line 27 says a bill has been introduced in the state legislature to ban fracking.
Yes.
That's been out there for several years.
Yes, and the purpose of the bill is, I'll read it, it's pretty short, prohibits the use of hydraulic fracturing in the extraction of oil and gas, prohibits acceptance, disposal, and or processing of any fluid used in a hydraulic fracturing process. That's the ban bill.
Okay, now, wait, take a breath. Are those the bills that, when Brian was referring to action that this body took some time ago, are those the bills could we have endorsed those at that time? Did we endorse those
at
that time?
They didn't exist at the time.
We did not. Okay, that's just for information. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So, since the time that we've called on New York State to put a moratorium, to examine things more closely, and then to ban the practice, there have been many, many Senate and Assembly bills introduced, some of which matched each other, some of which didn't, that we've been following. And these are the ones that there seems to be support coalescing around, that certainly the Assembly coalesced around the moratorium bill to the point of supporting it with a veto-proof margin. The Senate, it's hard to find out because things are not coming to the floor related to hydrofracking. So we're hoping that this will be brought to the floor.
Do you know if any of those bills include wording with regard to the status of the health-related items, that the part that I'm very concerned about?
I think the Carlucci bill
might deal with that.
Might talk about pending the health study, but I'm not sure about that.
Which one is that, Mark?
I'm looking at the numbers. I'm not sure. I don't think...
Let's see.
The number here is for the Senate bill is the Avella bill. Am I right?
The moratorium bill, which reads, the explanation suspends the issuance of permits for drilling wells for natural gas extraction in certain areas. You know how the bills work. They have a certain purpose, and then they refer to specific areas in the rest of state law. And so one of the areas that it refers to is a school of public health within the State University of New York shall conduct a comprehensive health impact assessment following a model record. So it, it does refer to
that. So that one does address the health, the DOH business. Okay.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Well, the other one is saying let's ban it at this point and start over. And so I don't know that refers to conducting additional studies at this point, because the studies then we sort of start over in determining what studies would be needed. Certainly health would be one of them as far as I'm concerned.
Any other discussion? Kathy, Luce, and Will.
Thanks. I'm going to support this. I think for me the distinction between what we've done before we said we'd like it banned, we also said we'd like a moratorium on the moratorium because the SGEIS was flawed. Now we're getting a two-step here where we're noticing that it's more and more likely that the SGEIS was flawed, and what we're saying is we want a ban, but in the absence of the ban, we want a new SGEIS because of we need one that's independent and comprehensive. And many of us believe that what we got before wasn't independent, nor was it comprehensive. That's why I'm going to support it, because I think putting those two together, we haven't really done that yet, so I think it's important and in the presence of those bills, so I'm going to support it.
Thank you. Will?
And I'm going to support it as well, and just to complicate and get everybody waking up, I want to make one little amendment, which should be actually on your table. It looks like this. And it deals with a piece of this that I think really needs to be in, which is the whole issue of the unfunded mandate.
Oh, thank you.
And it reads, whereas New York State Association of Counties, NYSEC, raised concern about costs to local governments and communities would become an unfunded mandate, following testimony by Commissioner Joseph Martens about the E&E report of the D.C. Legislative Budget hearing on February 4th, 2003, and. So that's an extra whereas. I would put it on line 22, and I so move.
Second.
Moved by Will, seconded by Frank. And I would point out that statement, the full statement by NYSEC, is in your red folders. It looks like this. Is there a discussion on that amendment? Dooley.
Well, I thought an earlier version I have seen that actually quoted the NYSEC statement was a useful addition, and I note that this shorter version doesn't have that in. So the reason I liked putting the whole statement in is that to the extent that other counties may wish to read our resolution, they will have that language in front of them. So are there copies of that earlier version anywhere?
I have a question. Kathy, if we just added attached, like if we said, where's the New York State raised concerns, if we somewhere said statement attached, could this then go along with our resolution, you know, into the record? It wouldn't be part.
Well, okay. I'll read what I have, which would be an amendment to yours, which would be, whereas the concern about costs to local governments and communities was raised again by the New York State Association of Counties. Which, following DEC Commissioner Martens' failure to answer state legislators' questions about the insufficiency of the ecology and environment report, at the previous day's budget hearing, said, and then their quote,
well, okay, if that's an amendment to the amendment, but we don't have a copy of that, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Is that an amendment to the amendment?
That's what I said it was, yes.
Okay. Is there a second for that amendment? Okay. Then that fails for lack of a second. Not a second, am I right, Peter? Something else?
No, I'm not seconding.
Right, okay.
Well, in any event, you shouldn't say E&E. You better spell out the whole thing because it doesn't exist elsewhere as E&E.
I would accept that. Yes.
Okay. I think I had Peter and then Frank.
I'd like to call a question on Will's amendment.
Okay. Is there a second? Second by Mike. All in favor of calling a question on Will's amendment, please raise your hand. Opposed? That passes 9-5. Is that right? Yeah, 9-5. All right, then we're ready to vote on whether to include this amendment on line 22, so it becomes the fourth whereas.
Okay.
We're ready to vote. There's no discussion.
Beg your pardon.
All in favor of that amendment, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Opposed? Opposed? That passes 9-5. All right, so that's now in there. Discussion on the main motion. Frank.
Okay, now that that's in there, I wanted, the reason I voted no is I wanted some clarification if it hadn't been called as quickly. The amendment says, raise concerns that costs to local governments and communities would become an unfunded mandate following testimony by Commissioner Joseph Martens about the environment and the E&E report. That speaks only to the environmental issue. What I'm concerned about is if these, we all know that the unfunded mandate has been hovering over health departments to do all those reviews. And I don't think that the wording in this amendment, now part of the main motion, goes far enough in defining that.
Well, I think if we try to stick close to the NYSAC statement.
Well, that's why I was glad that you were trying to get that in, because the NYSAC, this one, yeah. This one, I think, is, Will, don't throw a tomato at me, but I think the NYSAC statement is clearer than.
But it doesn't say anything about health or anything else. It just says there will be an impact on local governments.
But it didn't limit it to E&E.
E&E is just the name of the company that performed the whole socioeconomic study that ignored the fact that there would be all kinds of costs to us. They're just it wasn't just the environmental costs. It was the fact that there would be all kinds of costs.
I understand what you're saying, Frank. I think that's.
We're not listing the cost.
That might really be overthinking it.
I was trying to find it, something that would be a hook to hang this on in one of the previous whereases. And Martha, I don't know, I don't know if you had to write this, but I know Carol did. Is there some other whereas?
Point of order, Madam Chairman, shouldn't there be a discussion? Shouldn't there be a motion on the floor?
It's discussion on the main motion.
It's discussion on the main motion, Peter, which, believe it or not, is permitted.
I have a thought. We could ask Marsha Lynch to, in her press release, actually quote the NYSAC statement. It's not that long. I mean, it's like, who's going to read the resolution, probably fewer people than are going to read the press release. So I don't know if that's an option, but.
Yeah, it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Okay, better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. Okay, maybe she will try. It's a little long. All right, Carol.
Frank, are you trying to get another whereas that would say, and whereas those costs will include costs to our roads and to our health departments and to
something like that.
Water resources and to, I mean, I thought that was handled by reference to all of our earlier resolutions that list all of those things. We've got a resolution.
But this resolution doesn't refer to all our, or the, does it refer, in? Excuse me.
Yeah.
Is that resolution 67 and resolution 245?
Well, our resolution, of 2011-215, it went on for 1, 2, 3.
Well, just tell me if it says it in there. You don't have to read the whole thing, Carol.
You know, I'm thinking that folks are really tired. We haven't even gotten, to the staff reports and stuff like that. If we could just kind of figure this is good enough and it's not going to have the whole kitchen sink in it, I'm hoping we can move to a vote. Okay. Any other discussion? All right. With the amendment of adding Will's whereas in there, all in favor of the amended? Yes.
Sorry. Are we voting on the? We already voted on the amendment.
I said, with the addition of the. The amended resolution, all in favor of the main motion, please. Raise your hand. Opposed? That is 13 to 1, unless Peter wants to vote. Peter, are you, 12 to 1.
I'm on the positive side.
That would be 13 to 1. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, so I think, Ed, you can go home, right? We're trying to peel off our audience here. Now, if I'm not mistaken, is anybody else waiting for anything else? All right, then I'm going to go back to the chair's report. Which I think is where we left off.
Let's do the mortgage recording.
Well, all right, listen, I don't have a chair's report. How about that? Joe Mariana, county administrator's report.
Really fast. Living Wage Group continues to meet. We had a great public input session last week. We had about 60 people who came and expressed their thoughts, comments, and perspectives. We probably have two or three more meetings to go. We're beginning to make the turn toward recommendations. The airport remains as it was 2 weeks ago when we last talked about it. The U.S. DOT has not made a decision about whether to fund the contract towers in spite of a lot of congressional pressure. There is a related item that we'll want to talk about in executive session briefly regarding litigation tonight. I've been looking at some email in the course of the evening. I just got a note from the Racker Center indicating that the governor has made decisions about the way to allocate some of the cuts affecting the OMRDD-related agencies, and that most of the $1 million that they feared they would lose has been restored, all but about $50,000. That could be to the detriment of counties. That remains to be seen in terms of how the governor allocated that money. So it may be good news here, bad news there. So stay tuned.
You mean bad news here, good news there.
Right. So given the lateness of the hour, I think that's it for my report. And we do have a couple of things to talk about in executive sessions.
Frank.
Just a quick one. Joe, when we met last, you sort of picked up the ball on this ethics review.
Yeah.
Any status on that at all?
I haven't heard anything back directly. We have a department head meeting tomorrow. The department heads know that they're to come back with any comments.
Okay.
Beginning with tomorrow's meeting, so by your next meeting, we should have that compiled and available to you.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Joe? Thank you, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
No report.
Thank you, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
Well, I'll report my days are numbered. My successor will be appearing at the next legislative meeting. He starts work on Monday. I wanted to, you can mark your calendar that I'm hosting an event on August the 9th, the evening of August the 9th, to celebrate my departure. The theme of the event is still unindicted after all these years.
I don't know, we still have till August 9th, right?
So just want to report, last week we had our property tour. Those 13 properties are on the rolls for foreclosure. The planning department will be preparing a report at their next for the GO meeting to vote on which property should go to auction. I will say that there are four properties that have occupants in them. And that's all I can say about that. The auditors are in residence now in the small side of the conference room. They started Monday. And I just wanted to report that the report that we've turned over to the auditors is very positive news. We ended up with an operating surplus, which is defined, our revenues exceeded our expenditures in the general fund by about $4 million. And so there is expected that the unreserved fund balance will increase by about $3.7 million, which is really good news. That's subject to audit review. But I'm very happy that on my last rodeo, it's a positive situation. And what And what we'll also be doing, you know, in the next couple of weeks is we're preparing this one final financing. You approved three bond resolutions tonight. It's going to be a rather large issue because we are going permanent financing on the COFA project, as well as the courthouse, old courthouse renovations, public safety energy performance contract, and the telephone system, as well as this, about $10 million of notes to finance the cash flow of the highway projects. So, so that'll be one of my last major projects, I guess, before I fade away.
Can I say one thing while David is still up there? He's humble. He was recognized. Last week was the NYSEC Finance School, where finance people from all over the state gather. And David was recognized and awarded the President's Award by NYSEC last week for his many years of distinguished unindicted service.
Don't go away, David. I think there's some questions. For one thing, I have to ask, did you just invite everybody on television to your house?
It's going to be at the Kitchen Theater, so it's cool.
Nice.
Okay. Desi Frankham?
David, are you going to get, is Gatsby going to be resolved by the time you retire?
No.
Oh, just thought I'd ask.
Was there another question?
Yeah.
Carol?
Can you send us or give us the location of the houses that are occupied, that are being foreclosed? And then I just wonder, I don't know exactly what the process is, but I know that the city of Ithaca works with affordable housing organizations about properties that are going to be foreclosed, you know, as to whether there's anything that they can do or whether they have an interest in trying to keep them occupied. Have we ever considered doing anything like that? And I mean, it's probably too late for these, but it's something we might want to consider in the future.
We have, well, we have a process. We review that. We have not. We adhere to the real property tax law standards, and the most flexible thing we can do is enter in installment agreements, which we offer to property owners who own or occupied, or, you know. But we don't extend the problems because if you can't afford to live and pay the taxes, it becomes a burden to the county because we are paying the unpaid taxes to the school district and the towns.
You know, no, I understand that. It's what I'm suggesting is that, yeah, that somebody else buy them who is committed to trying to keep the people who are in there in
Well,
them.
I always offer, you know, because our properties are pretty much mostly outside the city, because the city has more of an interest in. But we do always notify Better Housing about the opportunities. Okay. And it's really been few and far between properties that really that the housing agencies are interested in. This year we happen to have half a dozen, but they're in pretty bad shape, most of them.
I will say that I know social services works on that list. There was somebody in my district where it went on for a number of years, and social services worked, and Office for the Aging also worked with the individual for years.
Yeah, we do a lot of outreach about
the,
that.
The efforts were exhaustive to try to make it work.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Okay, are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right, I'll go through the consent agenda, which is pretty short. And if you want anything pulled, let me know. The only resolution is Resolution A, ID 4137, Award of 2013 Tourism Capital Grants, Tompkins County Area Development. And I have appointments. Carol, was Paul Tater forwarded by the
yes.
Planning Committee? That's still on. Okay.
Yes.
To the Fish and Wildlife Management Board, Paul Tater. The Environmental Management Council, Vladimir Michik. Tompkins County Youth Services Board, Kathy Gehring and Patricia O'Rourke. Do I have a motion on the consent agenda? Moved by Frank, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hands.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. So, standing committees, why not? 10 of 9. I'll go to the Public Safety Committee, Brian Robinson.
Thank you. And we have one resolution, ID 4053, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, Department of Probation and Community Justice, and I so move.
Seconded by Peter. Any discussion? All right, it's a short form roll call.
Mr. Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Burbank?
Aye.
Would anyone wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Any report beyond that?
There has not been a meeting since the legislature last met. Our next meeting is next Monday, the 13th. My one short little PSA would be, and I think everybody knows, that we are now entering prom and graduation seasons, so kids be safe, and obviously parents, grandparents, teachers, everybody watch out for them. It's a real scary time of year. So that's it.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. Any questions for Brian? Okay, thank you. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Chair.
Thank you. WDAC met on April 24th. We have sent our diversity policy on to department heads and staff for their review and comments, then coming back to us and then to all of you as well. We had a good discussion about our disability access and accommodation and what we offer and looking at places where we have those gaps. We hope to very soon have Arel or a designee join us to talk about when is the last time we did a diversity audit within our county and what that looked like and if it's time for us to enter into another diversity audit. We've been, you know, constructing and reconstructing, et cetera, so it might be time for us to look at that. And the other thing coming out of diversity of WDIC is a resolution in support of the Uniting American Families Act that is currently being considered by a federal government and that went on to budget, so it will come under the budget and personnel report. That's it for WDIC. And we're still trying to find a meeting date for May.
Okay. Thank you, Leslin. Any questions for Leslin? Thank you. Health and Human Services Committee, Frank Proto, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee will be meeting on May 14th. We're formulating the agenda now. One of the items that will probably come up for our June agenda, you may remember several years ago we formed a syringe exchange program. And Will reminded me that the individual that oversees that program that some of us were instrumental in starting would be available, we think, to come to the June Health Committee meeting. I'm giving you a heads up because there's been some interest in that. I just want to remind you of the COFA annual luncheon, the 21st of May at noon. You all received an invitation to that, and earlier this evening, seems like hours ago, Diane Dawson invited us all to the lifelong luncheon, which is coming up on the 16th. Last item, and I won't trouble you too much with this one, we still need, I'm going to be approaching the rest of the legislature, we still have a couple of liaison assignments that because of people's changing work schedules, the timing, it hasn't worked for them to attend because their work schedules interfere with the meetings. So be aware that I'll probably be harassing you a little bit especially individuals that are considering not running again. Hi, Pam.
You mean troublemakers.
Anyway, but we do seriously need a couple of positions filled, so I'll be bothering you about that. But the 14th is our next meeting.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions for Frank? All right, Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
I have no report. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. Our next meeting is 20 May at 10:30 in the morning.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter. I assume there are no questions. Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met last Thursday, and we decided the tourism capital grants. We had a very good presentation from Carl Haynes from TC3 talking about all the sort of work that they do that relates to economic development, and from our own Julia Maddock talked about the important work of the WIB. We barely got through that, and we realized we need to continue, and that will likely be happening. Our next meeting will be on June 7th, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you, Will.
My report.
Any questions? Thanks very much, Will. Capital Plan Review Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
June 6th, pardon me.
We will be meeting tomorrow at 3:30 p.m., and the location has changed. We'll be meeting at the Human Services Building because we're going to have a walkthrough over there at the beginning of the meeting and look at the Labella report and the possibilities of changes in that building to accommodate other programming. Other than that, we'll be continuing on things that we've been working on, trying to get the committee work finished and close out. We'll be continuing our discussion on the potential uses of the old library. And we'll be talking about, get some updates on the building project for the legislative chambers. And we're going to talk about legislator parking at the request of Legislator Kiefer. So we'll be doing that.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike? Mike, what are the hours when people want to go see the Tompkins building under, you know, the update and how it's going? What are the hours people can go see up until 3:30?
I don't know if I have that. I think, Joe, you said possibly noontime is
the
better time.
Lunchtime, they take a break, so you don't have to wear hard hats.
Okay.
If they're not working. But if you want to take a peek, maybe it's easiest just to call me. And we can arrange for you to get in.
Okay.
Do it that way.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. The GO Committee met on April 23rd. We had discussions on a couple items that we have already covered here tonight from other committees, including the policy on the required physical, which we changed and also, or deleted actually, and the resolution on green building, which we discussed at length in the committee, as well as here. We also had some very interesting reports from various people that report to this committee. Joe talked to us, and Jonathan also, about the updating on the situation with the tower at the airport, and they have both been spending considerable time working on that. We talked about the human rights director position, which both Paula and Joe have been very closely involved with. And Joe also talked to us about the livable wage group and how that is going. Marcia talked to us about the web project, updated us on that, and on the emergency management training that she's been involved in. Some of the things that Dave had mentioned to us have already been covered here tonight. The foreclosures, he talked to us about the audit, and he's also in the process of revising the policies in his department, which will be coming to us sometime soon, I think, and reported to us on new staff and the adjustment with the new staff. I already mentioned that Jonathan has been spending quite a bit of time on the airport group particularly. something else I was going to say here. Oh, I did want, since there seemed to be previously a considerable number of people who heard the statements that Arel made at the committee meeting, and we heard somewhat different things, which we contributed to the discussion a little while ago. So I thought I'd share with you what it says in the notes from that meeting about what was said. Mr. Lamaro said he would prefer to have the amount at $1 million. However, using the $500,000 amount could increase the number of potential projects completed to LEED certification standards. So that's what our minutes showed from that meeting. Not our minutes, I'm sorry. Our notes from that meeting showed. Let's see. Our next meeting will be on May 28th at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, Pat. Any questions? Thank you. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
We met yesterday, May 6th. We had a very full meeting, some of which we've talked about already. I will say that this Thursday, from 4 to 6, will be the ribbon cutting and official opening. There's already been a soft opening of the Sustainability Center that is over around behind our health department. So we encourage you, anybody who'd like to come and see it, the display, there are displays up. What?
It's behind COFA.
What did I just say?
Health department.
Yes, it's not the health department.
Oh, COFA was going to be at the health department,
yes.
Right?
COFA was
going to be.
Good listening. Sorry. Thank you, Pam. I'll try to get the rest of this accurate, but Pam, please listen carefully. Ed introduced a new planner in the planning department, Megan McDonald. She's a Cornell planner, so that's always near and dear to us, and she stayed for our whole meeting, so she hasn't been scared away yet. Ed talked to us about the Cleaner, Greener, Southern Tier plan that's been approved now, and not only is it this $1 million plan that really Tompkins County and Ed and his planning department were responsible for spearheading, but there now will be, across the state, there will be $90 million available now to start implementing these cleaner, greener plans, and that money will probably, as a priority, that money will go to plans that cross county borders. But it isn't clear yet what, you know, that money will be out there to apply for. The plan itself is available. You can go and see it for yourself at cleanergreenersoutherntier.org. That's all one word. There's a good executive summary and the top 22 actions that they're looking to promote. In addition to the resolution that we already passed, I mentioned a little bit earlier, we had a very good discussion, beginning discussion, about some of the inconsistencies in New York State's energy policy. On the one hand, saying we want to do some renewables, and on the other hand, not necessarily putting its money where its mouth is, and how we might start to think about weighing in on that, but we're nowhere near ready to do that yet. The EMC gave us a report. Very nicely done piece. You can go to their website and see it, but it's nicely laid out. They get a lot of information in one spot for their annual report. And then we had also another very interesting report from beginning to how do we start building this into our own homes, the kinds of things, ideals that we're talking about from Solarize Tompkins Southeast. And I'll tell you, boy, do I wish that I lived in Danby, Caroline, or Dryden. That group has now pooled the efforts. They have gotten, basically what they're doing is they are pooling their efforts and have gone out and solicited two companies, to help them be able to install solar photovoltaic, solar thermal, ground-mounted panels, in people's homes at a cost saving that will be a 32% price reduction They have done the vetting of the companies. They have ended up with Solar Liberty, just as we did. People will have the option of direct purchase of the equipment or leasing. They're talking about low-interest loans and how to get those. A price of 5.5 cents per watt of power will be reduced to 3.75 cents per watt. And they walked us through an example. Combined with the NYSERDA incentives that are available for putting solar panels and other improvements, and the federal and state tax credits, you literally could start with the typical price of $20,000, close to $20,000 for one of these installations, and get it down as low as $6,000 or even $3,000 after the incentives and the group pricing. So that's a huge savings that you could start to implement this. And they are taking names of people who want to have estimates done by Solar Liberty or Renovus is the company doing the hot water. So if you live in Caroline, Danby, or Dryden, I do really recommend that you at least find out about this. And if you live anyplace else, when these companies have fulfilled the contracts for these groups, they'll have time. We can try to organize similar efforts in other parts of the county. I hope we do that. I think that's it. Any questions?
Thank you, Carol. Kathy Lucen and Frank.
Thank you. I'm interested in the solar panel project. It sounds really exciting, and I've been reading about it on the sustainability listserv. I have the same concerns that I expressed, and would just like to encourage people to try to notice where the panels and equipment is being manufactured. I don't know if y'all are aware, but there was a time period when China dumped a whole bunch of solar panels on us. They were subsidized by their government, and so they were selling them basically below cost. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to have solar at a cost that's wonderful like that and very cheap, but I would really like it if, as part of our movement towards sustainability, we included the thought of encouraging manufacturing in this country and tried to encourage people to do a comparison, just as a way of driving the market, if nothing else, because there is, as was mentioned tonight, you know, there's a strong possibility that we could be helping to drive the market here. So I don't know. I asked some people, and they said they didn't know. And I asked somebody else, and they said they were pretty sure that they weren't U.S. manufactured. But I wasn't able to get a good response. I guess it depends on who the particular group was. I know that's all I got.
Yeah, they're offering a set of options depending on which equipment you want to use. And do I remember correctly, Joe, do you remember this? That when we chose Solar Liberty at the county, one of the reasons that we did was that they were manufacturing at least some of what they're doing in Buffalo.
I'm not sure that was a deciding factor, but I recall that the units are made domestically.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to use the units that they're manufacturing in Buffalo, but there's a lower price if you do.
That's my point. Yeah. Is that it's a sustainability issue for us to consider buying something manufactured in the United States, because it hasn't been shipped with what kind of fuel, I don't know, across many miles. And also, it wasn't dumped on the country at a low-cost price and might not be as good as something that's manufactured here and that has a recent local warranty. Just want to ask people to consider that, you know, building your economy.
Carol, did you say they can choose, that they are built?
They're offering various options. I mean, again, if people, Jonathan Comstock, Marie McRae,
is there a website or a phone number?
Yes, Solarize Tompkins SE, all one word, solarizetompkinsse.org has more information. And as I recall, what he said to us was that they are offering a set of options. There is a particular manufacturer, I don't know where they're located, that is sort of the gold standard in the field, and that one costs more. The one that they make, or that there was the Solar Liberty option, was going to cost less for people.
Okay.
So those the prices that I cited best case, a $20,000 system ending up costing you somewhere between $3,000 and $6,000 was using their equipment.
Frank, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I wanted to thank Carol for mentioning the projects in both Danby and Caroline, but I also wanted to, and Dryden, but I just want to add, too, that all the towns would welcome a donation. So if you have your checkbook handy, I know I can deliver your check to two of the towns. I don't know about the third one. But since you're supporting it, we would be very grateful for any donation you might consider.
Donation? You're giving me a donation to put one of these on my house, Frank? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, both towns. You know what where I'm going.
All right. So in other words, people can donate to help make it more affordable for low income. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's a very. I'm teasing her, but that seriously, they are accepting. They will accept a donation.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I should also say the lease option on this, you don't get all those tax credits, but the lease option could be as low as, boy, does anybody, $46 a month? Yes, $45 a month you could have one of these in your house.
All right, thank you very much. All good news. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, thank you. Broadband Committee met on April 22nd, and we just kind of updated ourselves on what's happening with the build-out, the project, and we're greatly concerned about the need to try to fill in the gap in the funding, because we're very concerned about the towns that are going to be left out of the way things stand right now, to say nothing of the fact that doing it later rather than doing it now is going to cost about half again as much as it would if we could do it all at the same time. And Dave is heading up our effort to look for funding for that part of the project, and he's been putting a lot of effort on that. We have people who expressed interest in two out of the three subgroups that we've formed, marketing and adoption and outreach and education. We're still looking for someone. If any of you know of someone who is interested in taking pictures or has a video camera or something like that, that they would like to do a video, we're looking to document the build out as it occurs. And we don't have anybody on the committee itself that has expressed interest in trying to work on that. But certainly if there were other volunteers out there in the community that were interested in it, we'd be happy to talk to you about it and see if you'd like to get involved in what we're working on. In May, we're going to change our meeting date to the 20th, the third Monday in May, because the fourth Monday falls on Memorial Day. So it'll be 5:30, same as usual, in the Borg Warner Room of the Tompkins County Public Library on May 20th. That's it.
Thank you very much, Pat. Any questions? Great. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Nathan Shigawa, Vice Chair.
Yes. Well, next I have, in addition to the resolutions that I've already brought up, I have Resolution H, then J, I, and then I'm going to have J be done by Legislator McBean Claiborne. So first I'd like to move Resolution H, which is rescission of Resolution Number 19 of 2011, endorsement of legislative bills S1742011 and A4697-2011, authorizing a 25-cent per $100 mortgage recording tax on obligations secured by a mortgage on real property. And I so move.
Thank you, Nathan. Second by Brian.
Yeah, and I think I would like to defer to Joe to just explain why we're doing this rescission.
It's to clear the decks, because really our eye should go to resolution I.
Yeah.
We want to send a message to the state, but there are prior actions this legislature has taken, so this will clear the deck, rescind what's already been passed.
Yes, and so we need to do this in order to also do Resolution I.
Okay. All in favor of Resolution H? Raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No, not I, H. So that is unanimous.
Okay.
Good
All right,
one.
Next,
I was asleep.
I would like to move Resolution I, supporting S-4661 and A-6682, an act to amend the tax law in relation to the mortgage recording tax in the county of Tompkins. And I so move.
Seconded by Pam. Discussion. Mike.
I have opposed raising the mortgage tax in the past, and I was glad we did the repeal that we just did of the old mortgage tax resolution. I will support this resolution, and the reason for that is because it is for a single purpose, and that is for TCAT.
Any other discussion?
And I've switched places with Mike. I will oppose this because I think limiting it this way was a mistake.
Frank.
Having spent a number of years on the TCAT board and chairing the TCAT budget committee for a number of years, I certainly would like to encourage you to support this resolution for the financial viability and continued sustainability of TCAT.
Peter.
As a current member of the TCAT board, I would like to second what Frank just said. I was really quite shocked to see that there was no stream of money for replacing the buses that will have their useful life ended soon, and all we could do without this is simply put our hands together and pray that some money comes from some government agency to fund it. I think this is an important addition to make that public transportation system stable.
Could I just ask, and I hope this is a manifest exclusion or omission, that we've got Senate Majority Leader, and since there's some question about how many people that includes, can we make that plural? I don't know. I guess I'm looking that we send this to Senator Skelos, Senator Klein, and Senator Andrew Stewart Cousins, and I think that'll cover it.
Majority Leader for the day?
Right. Until there's another arrest. So, all right, all in favor, if that change is okay. All in favor, resolution aye, please raise your hand.
Now you get
to say
aye.
Aye. All opposed. One opposed, that's 13 to 1. Great job. Dave?
Yeah, Martha, I'd like to go back to broadband for just a minute.
Sure.
Didn't say anything, and I probably should have. Last week, Chuck Bartosz asked me to attend a planning board meeting in Enfield, which basically has to do with setting up the tower, which will be the mainstay of the entire system, okay, which is right up on top of Mecklenburg Hill, if you will, okay, near the Grunfield. And anyway, they tentatively approved it, and we'll send it to the town board tomorrow night.
Okay. Sounds good. That's great. All right. Nathan, you have one more. You want to defer
yes,
to Les?
Yes. And so for Resolution J, I will defer to Legislator McGinn.
Sure. Thank you. Resolution J, and I am looking at the substitute resolution on the substitute resolution that's in your packets. ID number 4124, resolution in support of H.R. 519/S.296, Uniting American Families Act of 2013.
Is there a second? Seconded by Kathy Lewis. I'm sorry, Leslie, did you say you're moving the one offered by Legislator Kiefer?
No, one other revised offer by Legislator Kiefer.
Actually, I think the committee has to move the committee.
You know what? You're right. The committee resolution. So the one that's in our packet is what we're moving, and then Dooley can substitute.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay, so it's in our stapled packet. And I have a question. Is it 519 or 510? They're two different numbers.
It's 519.
It's 519.
Okay, so that's an error, but it's not a different bill. It's an error.
Yeah,
it should be 519.
No, it's
okay.
519.
All right. Okay, so that's, and Kathy Luce, that's acceptable. That's the one in the packet. In the stapled packet. The committee has to move the stapled, the one that went out mm-hmm. and that was approved by committee.
You're not talking about the substitute.
Correct.
Good, yes.
Okay. All right, so discussion. Julie.
I tried to do a fair amount of homework to understand the thrust of the resolution, which I fully support, but I had a lot of trouble with the interior whereases. So my substitute gets rid of them and focuses completely on the intent, which is to stop discriminating against a class of persons. And it also thanks our senators and congressmen for co-sponsoring this and asks everybody to make sure that these principles are included in any more comprehensive immigration reform that might get adopted. I also added sending a copy to the president since he's being asked to support this too. So that I would move this as a substitute.
Is there a second? Seconded by Pam. So the question is whether to substitute this one. Kathy Lewis?
Ordinarily, I wouldn't support this, but I think tonight I'm tired, everybody's tired, and essentially it's saying the same thing.
Yes.
This is important because it's inclusive. That's what we're about, is not discriminating. And I think if I think it's consistent with what we say we stand for here in this county. So I would go ahead and support Dooley's substitute.
Okay, Pat?
Well, I'd like to agree with my colleague, Kathy, but I have to disagree. We pass resolution after resolution after resolution where we include language that helps to shed light on whatever the topic is that we're passing resolution on. And we say it's partly for the sake of the resolution, but also to educate people. And I think it's really important in this particular resolution, well, as it is in any resolution, that people who are reading it really understand why it's important. And it's fine to say that it's important because everybody should be treated equally, yes, but I think it goes way beyond that. I think people need to understand what happens to same-gender couples who fall in this trap of the immigration system and the way it works right now. And it can force families to live apart. If one member of the family cannot sponsor their partner and allow their partner to come to the United States, their family can be forced to be uprooted. They can be separated from their children simply because those couples are treated differently than opposite-sex couples. And I think that the language that's in there, I understand Dooley has some problems with the use of the word they because they is a pronoun and it may not be exactly clear to what they refers. But those are the kinds of things that if we all agree that that's important, we can fix that. But I think the idea of spelling out why it's important to pass this legislation is very important. I'm using the word important too many times, but obviously it's important to me.
Leslie and Kathy?
So, Pat, it is important to spell that information out. A big part of my focus was trying to verify some of the numbers that are in there. So that whereas that explains what happens, was fine for me, but trying to verify the numbers of 36,000 and the 39%, and so I had a hard time finding that information to say, yes, this is accurate for a resolution. So if you are interested in moving an amendment to the amendment to re-include that other whereas, we can look at that.
Lines 18 through 20.
Pardon?
Lines 18 through 20.
Right.
That's fine.
Yes, I would move that.
I'll second it.
To re-include lines 18 through 20.
Second.
That's fine.
That's fine. That's friendly.
That's okay. Friendly. Okay.
And to the seconder also.
Okay. So we're striking out the strikeout. Okay.
18 through 20.
Right. Right. Kathy.
I think that's great. I appreciate what you had to say about that, Pat. Just briefly, I have to tell you all a story. I was at Cornell talking with someone recently. I've known her for 25 years. I've watched her through her career at Cornell. And she mentioned to me, kind of casually, that her daughter had moved to Canada. And it turned out that her daughter had a very good-paying job here. She's highly skilled, an academic. And her partner, which she had never told me that her daughter was gay, but it turned out her partner was unable to get a visa here, and her partner was highly sought after and was much, her talents are much in demand. They moved to Canada, and they have two children, and they're happy there. The thing is, of course, she has to go visit them all the time there, but they would have liked to stay here, but under the current, you know, situation, it just wasn't worth the discrimination for them. So I think there's real-life stories about people that this affects all the time, and not all of them are in that good of a shape financially. For some, it makes a real difference in the outcome of their life in terms of health and safety and other things. This is just one of the higher level cases in terms of education and all that. This is huge, and I appreciate you speaking to inserting the relevant language back.
So what's in front of us is whether to have the substitute become the main motion.
Right.
Julie?
I'll wait till after that's decided.
Okay. Are we ready to vote then?
Mm-hmm. So which are we voting on?
Well, we've got that language on 18 to 20 added back in to Legislator Kiefer's resolution. So mm-hmm. with that addition or replacement or whatever, the question is, do we make this the substitute?
That's the main motion.
Oh, okay. So if you say yes to that, that means then the next thing is that this is the main motion we vote on, that we will vote on, discuss and vote on. All in favor of the substitution, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That looks unanimous. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So Julie's motion with that change is there. Julie?
What I wanted to mention is that in trying to verify the numbers, because that's what I had a lot of problems with, I came across what is probably the argument that will appeal to more members of Congress, and that is what Kathy just alluded to, that highly skilled workers mm-hmm. are being lost in this country to a number of European countries and a number of our major competitors internationally, because they do give this recognition to those couples. And that's the kind of argument that I came across more frequently in favor of this resolution than anything else. But this resolution is silent on the business argument, and that's fine too. But I thought everybody should know that elsewhere that is being used as a very potent voting reason.
Leslyn?
Thank you. You know, I know often, you know, a number of my colleagues, you know, have concerns about us weighing in on issues that are at the state or federal level, the issues that involve discrimination, diversity, inclusion are global, and it's a place that we should have a voice in trying to help change. Will spoke earlier, and I was almost in tears as you were talking about attending the naturalization ceremony, because I remember my day of standing there and raising my hand and listening to the Suzuki violinist play America the Beautiful as I took that oath. And it's the same kind of thing that I would like for everybody to be able to experience. It's hard enough when you leave one place and you start over, and sometimes you leave your family behind and they come later on, it's another thing to live in a place and not be able to have your family come with you as a legal, law-abiding, talented citizen who's contributing to society. So I hope in the spirit of just hearing that and hearing that this is real for thousands of people, that all of my colleagues will join us in supporting this and asking our representatives at the federal level to please make sure that they press for inclusion of the United American Families principles in our comprehensive reform movement legislation that is being considered. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslin. Brian.
And thank you, Leslin, for that little segue into this. Yes, I did vote against this at committee, not because of the resolution. I will be supporting the resolution. Again, it was to promote discussion here instead of it being on consent. And to kind of illustrate the fact, again, for me, that, you know, by all means, contact whoever, this is my opinion anyway, with regards to federal law that you support, that we all support. And I guess I can accentuate this a little bit by noting that we approved $6,470,000 worth of bonds tonight, plus a mortgage recording tax that is going to total untold millions. And the bonds took about 27 seconds, and the mortgage recording tax, not many. No, seriously, we are sometimes, anyways. This is obviously a very important issue. I took a little bit of issue with another issue tonight, but my point is that we are spending that kind of money. And some will be reimbursed, I understand, but if this is about education, we need to educate the public on things of that matter as well. And sometimes we fall a little short doing that. All they hear is you know, $6.5 million. And it's like, you know, it was just happenstance.
I think
that's my point. I will be supporting this resolution.
Well, that's great. The time we spend on spending measures is often inversely proportional to the amount of money that we're talking about. So,
I just want Brian to know that right in this moment, I really, really like him. Now.
That's good. That's good.
You didn't a minute and a half
ago. No, I did not, because, boy, I was getting them.
Keep it up, Brian. That's great. Any other discussion? Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution J, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That is unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Kathy Lewis.
Apropos of really nothing, I can't help it, though. What do Rhode Island and Delaware have in common? In the last 5 days, each of them have passed freedom to marry bills,
yes.
And the governors have signed both.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Pam, we have an executive session. Okay. Carol?
Yeah, while you were listing the various people that the last few resolutions should be copied to, mm-hmm. I realized that there was an error in the moratorium ban conflict of interest bill, a resolution. It came out of committee with a final paragraph listing all the people it was supposed to go to, and that got left off of the revision here. Can that be considered a manifest error,
yes.
Or do you need me to put it back on the floor as a member of the majority?
No, so that'll get
okay.
That actually was passed by committee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Good. All right, Frank. I hope you're going to move the minutes.
Can you? Do you want me to move the minutes?
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
And then I'll move the minutes. Can you remind us about the TC3 meeting on Friday?
Friday at 11:45 at TC3 in their forum room, 11:45, so you can get your lunch, and then 12 o'clock the presentation will begin about our budget and request from TC3. And Nathan, I'm sorry, was there anything else for budget?
Nope, that is all.
All right, thank
I'll
you.
Move
okay.
The minutes.
Motion on the minutes of April 16th, seconded by Pat. Any comments?
Good minutes.
All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Two opposed, and let's see, we lost one, so we lost two, so we're 12, so 12. 10 to 2. All right, I would like a motion to go into executive session to discuss litigation and personnel matters. We do not expect to take another Any action afterwards? Moved by Pat, seconded by Peter. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. We're going to take 10 minutes to close down the microphones. Please be in your seats at 10:15.